Hey everyone, this is Joe Heiler from SportsRehabExpert.com, and today I've got Todd Neef on the phone. Todd is the owner of South Loop Strength and Conditioning in Chicago, and Todd got into CrossFit in 2008 while he was rehabbing from a knee injury, and really got into it and actually became a full-time CrossFit coach back in 2010. And CrossFit's one of those things that I've been wanting to get someone on here for a while now to kind of clear the air a little bit and help some of us that maybe don't understand it or you know don't kind of know the ins and outs of their training programs to get a little more familiar with that. So I know I train a lot more of their athletes now, so I'm kind of learning. So Todd, it's great to have you on here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat a little bit about some strength training.
Yeah, well, and yeah, it's good to be on here. And again, this should be a pretty interesting topic. So why don't we start out, give us a bit of your background and tell us a bit about your business and how you really got into CrossFit.
Yeah, completely. So you kind of broke it down a little bit. I was a soccer player growing up, and I had some, no acute knee injuries, but some major knee problems where, I would get out of bed and I couldn't really walk around. And my main exercise at the time was always running. And I was like, okay, well, I really walk in the morning and running seems to make this worse. So what do I do for exercise instead? And just kind of was poking around on the internet and came across the CrossFit site, which my roommate in college was in Air Force ROTC. So he had exposed me to it before. I'd never done it, but I was like, oh yeah, I remember this. This seems cool. Let me try this. So this was back in 2008. And I was just kind of following the CrossFit.com workouts on my own, just training at a Bally's. Doing stuff I had no business doing. I had no clue what I was doing in terms of weight, no clue what I was doing in terms of what the workout should feel like or look like. But I would just kind of go and do it to the best of my limited ability and just started getting really into it and just absorbing information, just trying to follow all the blogs about it and follow the CrossFit Journal. And then once you start, reading that stuff, you start kind of branching out and saying, okay, well, who's this guy Charles Poliquin? Who's this guy Eric Cressy? And really, really keeping learning with all that stuff. But for me, it just kind of clicked where I was like, oh, you kind of have all these measurements that you want to make better. And Greg Glassman's article on what is fitness, which is sort of, it's not necessarily a specific task, but the ability to perform well at a variety of tasks really clicked with me too. So that just kind of made sense. And I just kind of dove in and started, I'm sort of a self-improvement junkie. And this was a pretty perfect avenue to get pretty involved in that.
Well, let's go ahead and just tell us a bit more about what CrossFit is. I mean, even to start with, because I'm sure a lot of people have different, ideas in mind of what it actually is. But, I mean, to you, what is CrossFit all about?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you sort of take the CrossFit headquarters, what is the definition of CrossFit? They'll say it's constantly varied functional movement at high intensity, right? And you can kind of break that down to a whole bunch of different subsets of things and say, okay, well, what's a functional movement? And according to CrossFit, it's a movement that allows you to move large loads long distances quickly. And what's intensity? It's not necessarily just trying hard, but actually having high power output. And then the variation piece, there's a whole bunch of arguments about you don't want it to be random, you just want it to be varied and all that type of stuff. But realistically, I think that definition is kind of unsatisfying for people. And I think also, it's sort of running into a phase at this point where CrossFit is so ubiquitous that saying you do CrossFit is sort of like saying you do personal training, where it's like, oh, okay, well, what does that actually mean? Because a lot of people are operating at a lot of different levels in terms of their, sophistication and agenda. But for me, the way that I think of CrossFit is it's a strength and conditioning program. And I think that one of the things that people think of as sort of characteristically CrossFit is energy systems training with a lot of mixed modal aspects, right? So not just being on the rower, not just running around, but actually sort of moving from, a kettlebell swing into a burpee, into, running into a squat or something like that to actually get your energy systems training. And I think the other piece of that too is that the overall end result of the training, what the goal is going to vary a lot from person to person as well, right? So in general. CrossFit is kind of a general physical preparedness program, which is just sort of meant to make you able to do other stuff. But at this point, we have, you know, people doing CrossFit for a sport specifically. We have the National Pro Grid League coming up this fall, which is a team, you know, mixed modal human performance race. And you have people who are training for, you know, rugby or football or what have you. And you have just general clients who want to feel better, look better, and all that type of stuff. So I think the end goal is going to make a big difference, too, in what the person involved is going to be trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the things, too, and I think this was something you had brought up when we were talking before about just a healthy understanding of CrossFit here. Because, yeah, people are using it, you know, I mean, there's a sport. And I was telling you how I was in Boston, and apparently they had the regionals, and, I mean, they had these big competitions. So, I mean, there's people training for CrossFit as a sport versus people that are training just for general fitness. You know, we can maybe talk about just some of the differences, you know, between, you know, competition and just general fitness.
Yeah, absolutely. So, kind of like I mentioned earlier, one of the things that I think draws a lot of people to CrossFit is the sort of competitive and measurable aspect. Right, when you start giving people a score for something, then they start to want to make that score better. Or if you're like, okay, well, your Fran time is 4 minutes, you're like, well, what do I have to do to make it 3 minutes? Right, and it's just a very human instinct to want to just be able to make that number better. So sort of out of that, CrossFit lends itself very well to competition because you can say, okay, well, we're going to do these workouts, and whoever does them the fastest is then the winner of the competition. And this sort of started, you know, the CrossFit Games started in 2007 as kind of like a friendly event like that. But just kind of the way people are built, where they want to beat each other and win and all that type of stuff, it's sort of evolved into a much, much, much bigger production, as anyone who's kind of been involved in the community can see. But as you mentioned, I do think that there is a little bit of a disconnect here sometimes in terms of what does it mean to compete in something with the intention of winning versus what does it mean to, you know, compete casually versus what does it mean to just do something for fun. And I think if we take sort of the, like a 5K run as an analogy, you know, you can say, okay, you know, I'm going to go run the turkey trot and I want to beat my previous time. And I maybe want to try to get under 20 minutes, which is like, that's a respectable 5K time. You're going to have to put some work in to do that. But that's different than like, I'm going to run this in 14 and a half minutes and I'm going to win, which is different than I'm going to kind of go with my friends and I just want to finish. Right. So I do think that there's sometimes a disconnect in terms of where people are trying to get to and what their programming looks like relative to that within the CrossFit community.
Okay. Well, one of the things we had talked about, too, before was, you know, kind of the difference between what people say they're doing, and in my mind, kind of that all-out, you know, hardcore mentality all the time versus what they're actually doing. Maybe this plays into a little bit what the end goal is, too, but I know that's kind of the picture I get sometimes listening to the stories is it's all-out all the time. You know, if you can, you can pass out, throw up, whatever, you're doing better.
Yeah.
So kind of how, what would you talk, go ahead and talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, for sure. So that's another thing that, you know, within the community, there's certainly debate over what best practices in terms of actual, you know, training intensity, right? So at some point, you know, I think CrossFit headquarters has put out information saying that you basically want the intensity as high as possible all the time and that intensity is what gets you results, which, you know, in other strength and conditioning models, is not necessarily the way things are approached, right? People sort of say, well, you want to be able to operate, you know, just under the curve of where you're going to fall apart and then be able to repeat it over and over and over again to kind of build volume in that area and get an adaptation, right? So I do think that there's, you know, some theoretical argument in terms of what actual best practice is in terms of making people better. But the trick is that people will say they're doing one thing, but they won't actually be doing what they say they're doing. So, you know, within the CrossFit community, there's this sort of like, okay, you know, we go super hard all the time and we just full intensity, you know, try to find the puke bucket and all that. And people will say stuff like that, especially top athletes, but that's just really not what they do at all. You know, because they'll say, oh, yeah, you know, I hit this workout all out, and then I decided to jump in and hit this workout all out, and I did this workout all out. And then if you sort of think about it, you're like, no, you didn't. Because if you told me you ran a mile all out, and then you rested a few minutes and then ran another mile all out, and then rested a few minutes and ran another mile all out, I would tell you were lying unless you had, you know, just massive attrition on each of those timepieces, right? Where if you're telling me you ran your first mile all out, your second one's going to be, you know, 2.5 minutes slower unless you give yourself an hour rest. And even then it might still be slower. So I certainly think that there's some misconceptions in terms of what people are accomplishing or are doing to get at that higher level of achievement. And I think sometimes that filters down, you know, to the general population, and then coaches who don't necessarily know any better are sort of believing what they hear from top athletes are like, all right, guys, this is a different situation since you have a class and you're just sort of controlling these people for an hour. It's like, all right, we got this workout and you guys need to just kill yourself on it because that's the way you get better. But in reality, that's not what the top athletes are doing. And I would also personally argue that's not what, you know, someone who just is coming to you to feel better and look better and, you know, be able to maybe play beach volleyball with their friends. They don't need to be puking from their from their workout every single day.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm sure too, it makes a big difference who's coaching, whose program you're a part of. You know, like I was telling you, I went to my son's junior high. I'm sorry, he's not junior high anymore now. He's in high school. I went to their football training. And it's a fairly common program you're going to see anywhere. It was awful. I mean, it looked awful. The kids couldn't perform the exercises. I was just figured someone's going to get hurt here. And that was pretty standard stuff. So, I mean, it can go south pretty quick with anything you're doing. So. But, I mean, one of the things I really wanted to ask, because I'm always kind of curious about that intensity level, and, you know, at what point do you actually stop a set? Because, again, you know, it could be one of those things you hear versus people, what they're really doing. But it does seem like the quantity is sometimes more valuable or more valued than the quality of the lift.
Yeah, sure. So I think that, again, gets kind of back to our discussion of just like, well, what's your mindset? Are you trying to compete and win at something? And are you just trying to, you know, train and feel a little bit better? So, obviously, if you're in a competition setting and you need to do something to win, then you do what it takes, right? You know, I think Charlie Weingroff had an example, you know, where it's like, are you going to tell the gold medalist in the, you know, the Olympics not to go valgus to stand up your queen? Like, no, you're going to win your gold medal. You're going to do what it takes to stand it up. So I think that certainly, you know, if you're competing in, you know, either the CrossFit Games or local competition or what have you, and you sort of made that decision that you want to win, that, yeah, sometimes you're going to have to do stuff that isn't going to be, you know, biomechanically good or like best practice or whatever, because that's what it's going to take to, you know, get your points and get your name on top of the leaderboard and all that type of stuff. But what I think ends up happening sometimes is that competition mentality is then filtered into the day-to-day training environment, right, where every day then becomes a competition where we say, okay, well, you know, we have the workout of the day and you want to win every day in training, and you're just going to try to push yourself as hard as you can to get that top time, which – you know, there's certainly a culture of that in a lot of different gyms, and I think that can certainly be counterproductive, right, in terms of training stimulus, in terms of long-term client development and satisfaction, in terms of program design, all that stuff. But, I mean, I think that folks who are doing a good job, and again, some of these folks are doing a really good job and they just aren't articulating it in the way that I would, you know, that a lot of people are using what amounts to interval training, right? So within these sort of mixed modal energy systems pieces, it's not just going to be, all right, guys, here's what you have to do. You know, you got 50 box jumps, 50 pull-ups, 50 deadlifts, 50 rowing calories, and 50 burpees. Like, go kill yourself. It's going to be more like, all right, we have 3 minutes of work, and we're going to rest a minute in between each of these sets. We're going to do it 5 times, and I want your first set to look like your last set. Right. So the way that we kind of prescribe stuff in our facility, it's really based upon, you know, we sort of used the example of mile repeats earlier, but it's really based upon trying to find the appropriate pace and output so that you can then rest and repeat it again. So we take a lot of effort to try to educate our clients in terms of what different, gears feel like, you know. What does it feel like to move at 80%? What does it feel like to move at 90%? What does it feel to move like what does it feel like to move at 95%? And mostly in our training, we're looking for sustainability across intervals and consistent output throughout whatever the time frame is, right? And obviously, you can manipulate that a little bit too by adjusting the rest time, where if you have shorter rest, then you have to move a little bit slower. If you have, you know, if I tell you to go 30 seconds all out on the Airdyne, and I want you to do the same thing again, I probably have to give you, you know, at least 3 minutes rest to be able to hit that again. Whereas if I tell you you're going to get 30 seconds rest, you're going to kind of internally pace that a little bit differently. So I think the fundamental answer there is like, well, when do you terminate a set? It depends on are you training or are you testing, and what's your goal? You know, do you want to get yourself into a fatigue-based state and sort of see if you can keep moving, or are you just trying to build up some volume, develop muscle endurance, develop the aerobic system and all that type of stuff?
Okay. No, and that sounds good. I like your approach to it, and I like what you said about Charlie's quote. I wish I could remember what interview that was from, but I use that a lot of times with my kids too, and like a deadlift is a great example sometimes. Mm-hmm. Of like, look, I want you to perform this lift, you know, I want it to look perfect. And if it looks perfect, you know, in training, and then you go to competition and it looks just god awful, but you win, fine.
Yeah.
You know, in my mind, you're doing it correctly 90%+ of the time. And that one time you do it poorly, if that's what wins you the competition or whatever, then that's fine. I figured they're not going to get hurt doing it wrong, you know, once or twice. And it sounds kind of like what you're saying, too, is if you're training appropriately, training with good form, when it comes time to just put the hammer down, you know, go for it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And the hammer coming down, you know, depending on the person, that could even just be a training session for them. But maybe, you know, they have double body weight back squat, you know, written down in their notebook as like their lifetime achievement goal. And like, you know, maybe they want to hit it on a Saturday afternoon at 1 p.m., and it looks like garbage, but, you know, if that's what they want to do and they understand it, like, you know, it's not necessarily my position to tell them, well, that last one looked a little sketchy. Like, I don't know if you should go up. If they know the risk that they're taking and they want to push it, you know, that's I think that adults can make that decision for themselves too.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, one other question I was just thinking when we were talking, because I saw that you were, I think you've been through USA Weightlifting. I think you went through like mm-hmm. a level 2 course as well. And I know when I took the course, it's been a while, but I remember when we were talking there, they really never go past 4 or 5 repetitions when they're doing a clean or a snatch. And that's just one thing I guess I've always had a hard time reconciling. And again, I'm probably coming from a different point of view, in that I work with a lot of football and more explosive sports where I don't want to train anybody to be slow. So I guess from your point of view with CrossFit and what the goals are, I mean, obviously it's a different goal. I mean, what's your take on that with doing more and more repetitions of a, you know, like an Olympic type movement?
Yeah, sure. So this is something that the internet trolls get very fired up about in terms of, you know, high repetition Olympic lifting. I mean, sort of a short answer to me is that, oh, well, this isn't going to be a short answer. We'll ramble for a little bit. But you know, I view any of these movements sort of as a tool, right? And the Olympic lifts have generally been used as a tool to develop, you know, speed and power. And if your goal is to develop speed and power, which it obviously is if you're competing in the sport of weightlifting, or if, you know, like you mentioned, you're sort of a more explosive athlete, someone like a football player, then you're going to want to use these lifts in, you know, very short time domain, extremely high power, full recovery between sets and all that type of stuff, because that's the only way you're going to train the energy system and the nervous system in the way that's going to get you the training result you're after. What CrossFit basically did, though, was said, okay, well, we have this tool of the snatch and the clean and jerk, which is really good for developing power and explosiveness, but it doesn't have to just be that, right? So if you think of it something like running, you can, you know, do flying start, you know, 50-meter sprints. You can do 400-meter repeats. You can do a 5K. And it's not like running is for sprinting. Like, running is running, and you can sprint or you can run a marathon. So I kind of think of the Olympic lift similarly, where if you do them at higher reps, it just changes what's actually being trained, right? Where, you know, 30 snatches for time is an entirely different feeling than hitting a one rep max, you know? 30 snatches for time is like a horrible, you know, middle zone glycolytic shit show, and you might lay on the ground for 20 minutes after that. And, you know, running 400 meters and then doing 10 snatches and then doing some double unders for half an hour is going to be, you know, it's going to feel like running a 5K, where you're like, okay, I need to push it a little bit, but I need to keep breathing and moving. So in terms of that, I think of it more as a tool than like necessarily this is for this. And then I think another thing that comes up with that is just the technique of the lift, right? That the way you're going to do a one repetition max on your snatch is probably going to look different than the way you're going to do, 75 snatches over the course of 20 minutes with a moderate load. So to me, I sort of view the higher rep Olympic lifting as basically the same idea as just kettlebell work. It's just done with a barbell instead, right? Like the kind of finding that, you know, I'm going to extend the hip and kind of just bring something up over my head and then bring it back down and do it a whole bunch of times. I mean, that's what the kettlebell guys do for 10 minutes, right? And it's somewhere in between. It's like an endurance sport type of activity. And I also think that people are perfectly capable of differentiating the motor patterns between what am I going to do for a one rep max versus what am I going to do with, you know, 75% of my one rep max for, you know, 20 reps over 5 minutes versus what am I going to do for 100 total reps at an extremely light load. It's really just the human brain is perfectly capable of coming up with different ways to accomplish those tasks and differentiating them.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure it's got to look like a totally different technique.
Yeah. And I mean, and kind of on that note, you know, I mean, you got people, one of the open workouts was 30 double unders and 15 light power snatches at 75 pounds for men and 55 pounds for women for 10 minutes, right? Which is basically, I mean, it feels like rowing a 2K. It's miserable. You're just turning it over and going and going and going, you know, and you got guys who can snatch almost 300 pounds with near flawless form, basically doing like a stiff-legged, round back deadlift pseudo kettlebell swing with the barbell, right, to get it overhead. And again, that's not something I would necessarily advocate, but for them, you know they can do it, they know they can get away with it, and they want to win, and that's kind of the, you know, the easiest way for them to do that, the least energy cost, and they're just kind of cycling through it.
Well, and then I want to kind of move on a little bit to talking about some of the movement assessment type things,
sure,
too, because obviously that's got to have some role in you know, kind of how you evaluate your athletes and then in your training program. So So could you talk about just some things that, you know, is there a system that you use, or is there some specific things you might look for when you're screening your athletes, or, you know, that are going to be a big deal to you, especially with some of these more complex lifts?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we do in terms of our facility, we do an initial assessment and consultation with everyone who is actually going to get started with us before they do, you know, either group classes or personal training or any of our options. And we start with the FMS with folks, just as kind of like a pretty good movement baseline, right? And just, you know, as Gray says, basically take the blood pressure on the movement and make sure that nothing's totally out of line or out of whack. And from there, it kind of is going to depend on the individual, what actually comes of that, right? Because if they're basically okay and good to go, we'll generally let them, you know, start jumping into classes, take our elements program and get rolling from there. We do try to give people stuff to work on, and sort of pick out their major pieces, especially in something like the overhead squat, where we don't necessarily need a 3 on the overhead squat, but we do so much squatting and so much overhead work that even if we see someone, you know, who has a 2 on the overhead squat, but it's kind of an iffy 2, we'll want to give them some work there. You know, maybe check their ankles, maybe check their thoracic spine extension, maybe make sure that they can externally rotate their shoulders and all that type of stuff, and start giving them some homework and corrective exercise and mobility work to do, just because those are a lot of positions that we know we're going to be eventually trying to utilize for folks. So we do the FMS up front. Generally, myself and one of my co-owners handle most of that, and we both have done some more continuing education and things like that. So I've done a lot of the DNS work, the DNS sport courses. So I've kind of found that to be pretty helpful in terms of quickly helping people move better. So I'll try to utilize some of that. And then within the CrossFit community, a lot of folks actually just love Kelly Starrett and his mobility WOD stuff, which a lot of is kind of like a, you know, sort of like a poor man's ART to be able to do it to yourself with, you know, lacrosse balls and all that type of stuff. So people love it, and, you know, they find his videos on their own and are doing band mobilizations and trying to, you know, release their hip flexors with medicine balls and all that type of stuff. So in general, we really try to give people a baseline and give them, you know, one or two areas that they can work on, and then try to give them the tools to do it. And then we sort of do group rescreens every few months where we'll set up a Saturday and just say, all right, guys, like, we're coming in, you know, grab your time slot, and we want to get through this again with you. And also another piece of that is we do try to I haven't actually watched Charlie's new DVD, but the lateralizations and regressions concept is completely, you know, how we think about stuff, where we have someone who, you know, has a history of knee problems and absolutely no motor control in terms of stability in the hip. You know, we might say, okay, cool, we can work on the squatting pattern. Maybe we'll have you work on some goblet squats. Maybe we'll have you try squatting to a box, whatever. But when there's squats programmed, you're not going to get a whole lot out of going heavy on this. So to start with, we want to maybe have you do, you know, some deadlifting on the squatting day, or depending on who you are, maybe you can get away with some lunging until we actually have a better handle on the squatting pattern. So we do try to pick out those major weak links for people, give them stuff to work on, and then sort of keep notes on them, and then have the programming be tailored to what their movement restrictions or issues may be.
Okay. Well, and yeah, and that's good stuff. So one of the things I wanted to specifically ask you about, you did talk about going overhead a little bit, because I guess where I mm-hmm. tend to see a lot of problems, I mean, not just with CrossFit, but anything, is the overhead lifts give a lot of people problems. And when you screen them out, or, you know, if it's for PT and I assess them, I mean, they have no business a lot of times taking anything over their heads, just because they don't have the mobility or stability to do it. So was there anything else that you might look for specifically? You talked about, like, the deep overhead squat to help kind of clear your athletes, because you guys do a lot of overhead lifting. And then I guess the other part of that question would be, you know, what might be some regressions that you might use or lateralizations that you might use, then, you know, if they can't quite do an overhead snatch, what might be an option?
Yeah, absolutely. So we certainly, you know, do the impingement test on folks, the FMF impingement clearing test, and that's a major red flag, obviously, in terms of trying to go overhead, right? If someone is just getting pain in their shoulder, doing that impingement test, we certainly want to say, okay, we need to be kind of careful with what we're doing in terms of, you know, Olympic lifting or any sort of upper body pushing, and even bench press for a lot of those folks too. So that impingement test is kind of the major red flag there. And then the other one, the shoulder FMS test, I think is pretty good, and that can be a good starting point, but I don't always think that that's the sort of perfect solution, because it's going to depend a lot on the person as well, sort of as you mentioned, because some people will have mobility issues. Some people have mobility issues in the shoulder itself. Some people will have a mobility issue in their spine. Some people just have no idea how to control their scapula and all that type of stuff. So basically, I kind of look at it on a much more case-by-case basis. I wouldn't say we have hard and fast rules for what people are doing, other than if you're impinging, we want to keep you out of any positions that are going to do that. But we will try to sort of look at those different pieces, and you know, if someone can't get their arms over their head without hyperextending their low back, we're going to try to keep them from, you know, loading up their overhead press. Maybe have them work seated with dumbbells to try to develop that a little bit without stressing it too much. We've used the half kneeling landmine press with folks a lot actually. Who have some of those overhead struggles, as kind of a way to get them in a similar position and start to work on it. I think I took that from Eric Cressy's blog at some point. And then one of the other pieces too is with the Olympic lifting, since that is a big piece of our program, for folks who aren't really able to do that, depending on the context of it, we can just switch it to some kettlebell work, right, and have them do, you know, Russian swings. Or we can switch it to like a box jump piece to work on that similar type of speed, to have them, you know, do a cluster of high box jumps so they can work on their hip speed, even though they can't really, you know, actually get into shoulder flexion or anything like that.
Okay.
I guess actually, since I'm talking to a physical therapist, do you have any thoughts on what would be a good maybe piece to add to that in terms of screening or clearing people for overhead work?
No, I like the examples you've been given. The landmine one's a good one. I actually use that quite often because I do a ton of work out of half kneeling, chop lifts. We're always looking for ways to progress that, especially in our athletes. So we'll go half kneeling and do some medicine ball work. We'll go to the landmine, do some work. Do a lot of work like different stages of the Turkish get-up too, because you start getting closer and closer to that vertical shoulder. Especially start getting, you know, posted up on the hands. So, yeah, we'll do a lot of stuff like that, getting as far as we can go, as long as everything is clear, there's no impingement, technique's perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I have the benefit of, you know, doing the manual therapy component. I get them cleared, you know, then we go right to something overhead too. So, yeah.
Yeah, completely.
That's a tough one, though. That's why I bring it up. It's a tough one to get that perfect shoulder control all the way overhead, the T-spine mobility to do it. I mean, that one even gives me problems in the clinic sometimes. So that's one reason for bringing it up. But
absolutely.
Did you have something else on that topic? Or?
So I was going to also add that within kind of the exercise selection of CrossFit and sort of typical CrossFit programming, I mean, there's just massive volume on the shoulder joint, right? And a lot of it is overhead. And that's something we try to be a little bit cognizant of. And again, I think that this sort of is another area where we can differentiate between people who are trying to compete and people who are just trying to, you know, exercise. Because the folks who are trying to compete, especially at the higher levels, I would say that, you know, muscle endurance in the shoulder joint and all that type of stuff will really separate the person who's number one from the person who's number six. So that's an area where with competitors, you know, you may have to beat up on them a little bit and kind of push them into spaces that aren't necessarily totally comfortable or best for long-term health. But that's their call to make that decision, that trade-off. But I do think that if you're training people who aren't trying to win and aren't trying to compete, that it may be relevant to not give them, you know, as many overhead squats and pull-ups in the same workout, and then, you know, have push presses and handstand push-ups in the same workout and all that stuff, where it's just repeatedly in that overhead position.
Yeah, and it's just good common sense with any workout too. So,
okay. Yeah.
Well, and what about one of the other things I want to talk to you is about, you mentioned like the mixed modal training and starting to use CrossFit workouts for other sports. Again, something I'm starting to see again too. So could you talk about that a bit? You know, what are some of the benefits of training in a CrossFit style for other sports? And then, you know, do you do some of that as well?
Yeah, completely. So we kind of mentioned this earlier where, you know, we can utilize these different tools to get different outcomes, right? So I do think that there is kind of a conception out there that, you know, CrossFit is for everyone and everyone is going to benefit from it. And if you want to run a marathon, you just do CrossFit. You want to play football, you just do CrossFit. And I think that that's a little bit disingenuous, right? That anyone who kind of knows a strength and conditioning models for different, you know, sports and different energy systems and things like that will be like, hold on, that doesn't really make sense. Like, why would I want to train a marathon runner the same way I would want to train a football player? And can they benefit from some similar things? You know, could they both benefit from single leg work? Probably. But do they need the same type of training program? I would certainly argue that they do not. So I think, though, that one of the big things that CrossFit has brought to the table is this mixed modal energy system training, right, where we can try to attack, you know, the glycolytic system, or you can try to attack the aerobic system, or, you know, do some alactic work, not just in kind of cyclical, monostructural manners. So it doesn't need to just be, you know, riding an Airdyne with intervals or rowing or running, that we can sort of take these other activities like, you know, a power clean and a push-up and a box jump and try to get some of those same energy system responses. Which, I mean, the research on this stuff is very, very limited, so it's difficult to sort of make, like, okay, well, these are, you know, the evidence-based best practices. But I think we can sort of say from, you know, empirical data and all that type of stuff that that we can get some pretty different responses from folks, especially in terms of what the nervous system is doing based upon all these different types of mixed modal training pieces. So I think there's value in that for a lot of sports-specific athletes because, you know, what you're doing in terms of, let's say, you know, a football example, is that there's going to be a high nervous system demand in a football play that is not necessarily going to be able to be recreated simply by doing cyclical energy systems work. You can't get that same nervous system activation just on, you know, a bike or something like that. You can probably get it much better by going from a prowler into a burpee into a sprint, and that probably feels more like doing repeated plays in football than just, you know, doing suicides or something like that. Although I do think one other thing that's worth adding is that a lot of, like, typical quote-unquote CrossFit work is very glycolytic, or it can be, especially for more powerful and explosive athletes, and that's something that I sort of try to stay away from with, you know, I train a rugby player, for example, and he's very powerful, decent conditioning, but definitely not like a great aerobic athlete. So with someone like him, you know, you don't want to just have him ending up in that shitty middle zone feeling horrible during all of his workouts because it's so easy for him to get there. So it's tricky, and, you know, if I just sort of had him do, like, a typical CrossFit workout, it would just be, you know, it would be a glycolytic monstrosity for him. Whereas in reality, you know, for his sport, does he need maybe touches on that? Like, probably, you know, if you do too many full field sprints, like you're going to feel that a little bit, but he doesn't need to be training that pathway extensively, right? He's going to benefit more from training the aerobic system and more of like an alactic piece than just like hanging out in that horrible middle zone all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Well, and, you know, why don't we finish up with, you know, talk a little bit more about maybe some advice that you would give others that are interested in learning more about CrossFit, whether they're interested in coaching it or they're therapists, chiropractors that work with some of these athletes. Because I know I've seen some of this, like, on your bio on your site, too. You've got a lot of – you list all the different courses you take. You've taken through CrossFit as well, which I had no idea. There were so many. So you're talking a little bit about just, yeah, or give some advice to others that are interested in learning more.
Yeah, absolutely. So within the CrossFit headquarters structure itself, they actually just updated the way that they do their seminars and their certifications, which is actually awesome because I think that was one of the big criticisms that people have. It's like, oh, it's just a weekend course and then you can kind of do whatever. So they upgraded that. So there's now four levels of certification and testing, some which are practical and some which are written. So I think that that's a really good step for them. The actual level one course is a weekend course that at this point I actually probably disagree with a lot of the details of the way that they teach things and the explanations for things, kind of like we mentioned earlier. But I do think that it's one of the best run weekend certifications out there in terms of, you know, actual practical hands-on coaching experience and structure of the seminar and all that type of stuff. So those are always around, and those are always good for people who kind of want to get a feel for what's going on. I personally have done a lot of work with James Fitzgerald and his Optimum Performance Training courses, and I think those are the best thing out there for anyone who's very serious about learning more about the kind of ins and outs of what's actually going on within, you know, mixed modal training, what does it take to compete in, you know, fitness as a sport and all that type of stuff. So his website is optccp.com. That's certainly more of an investment, a lot more information, right? It basically integrates a lot of the traditional strength and conditioning knowledge and models into, like, okay, so what does this actually mean, and kind of this new stuff that people are doing within CrossFit. And beyond that, you know, it's one of those things, right, as you mentioned earlier, it's enough of a hot topic now that people are just writing clickbait articles on it, right? That the content coming out, you know, on various blogs and things like that is just, it's total nonsense. It's a, you read it and they're like, what are these people even talking about? Like, what gym did they go to, and like, what are they even trying to accomplish here? But to me, it just kind of reads like page view, trying to drive the page views up. So in terms of finding out more, you know, the OPT stuff is really good. I create content regularly for Train Heroic. And there's a good repository of articles there. And then the South Loop Strength and Conditioning site at southloopfc.com was just updated. We're going to start posting some articles there as well.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and I'll get some links up to that as well. And I was going to, like I said, I'll feature the one of the articles that you wrote for Train Heroic as well, so people can check that out. But, yeah, like I said, I mean, I wanted to get you on here and just, you know, try to get a better understanding of CrossFit for myself and for others out there too, well, because it's definitely here to stay, and we'll be working with more and more of those athletes. So thanks so much for coming on today.
Yeah, completely.